You're listening to WRUU LP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. You are listening to Murmurations by Kirsten Volness. Is it jazz? Is it classical? Is it pop? Who cares about what label we give it or what musical genre it is? Because it is just wonderful music. You are listening to Evening Eclectic, and I'm Dave Lake, your host, for the next 2 hours of just that, music without labels, just great music and conversation. Enjoy. Tonight on Evening Eclectic, I'm talking with cellist Eric Kim about the new album on which he is performing with a Pacifica quartet entitled The Korngold Collection, which was released this past Friday, November 14th, on Sadie Records. This new 2-CD album includes composer Eric Korngold's 3-string quartets, a string sextet, and the piano quintet, which features Eric Kim cello, Orion Weiss piano, and Melina Perao-Vanderstadt, viola, in addition to the members of the Pacifica Quartet. Welcome to Evening Eclectic, Eric Kim.
Great. Thank you, Dave. Nice to be here.
Well, let's get to know Eric Kim. Of course, people in Savannah think they know Eric Kim, I think, as you are a rock star here in chamber music, but they probably don't. So let's talk about your musical journey.
I don't know how interesting it is, but it's certainly unique, as it would be with anyone else. I was born in New York, but left at a very young age, 5, and moved to kind of rural Illinois, where my father was a sociology professor in Macomb, Illinois, at Western Illinois University. And I didn't start playing an instrument until the following year, where I started studying piano with my mother, and then started playing the cello at the age of 9. And then got very, very fortunate to have unbelievable training in such a small town. A very funny story is that the cellist of the Pacifica Quartet, Brandon Vamos, his parents were teaching violin and viola in this very town where I grew up. And they taught my older brother, Benny, who you well know is also a regular in Savannah. So in a way, just music comes full circle. It's just like, we've known each other forever, and now we're here at Jacobs School at Indiana together and then playing on this recording. I must say that's probably, you know, why they asked. We've done some projects here together, and so feel very fortunate to have done that with them. Just grew up in Illinois, studied with Tanya Carey, who is a stalwart in the Suzuki world, and both Brandon and I studied with Tanya, and we're really very fortunate to study with such a fine musical and cello mind that has opened doors for many young players over the years. Then I went to Juilliard at the age of 18, studied with Leonard Rose until he passed of cancer, unfortunately. And then my remaining time at Juilliard, I studied with Lynn Harrell. And then out of school, graduation, I was principal cello at the Denver Symphony for a year. And then principal of the San Diego Symphony for a year, then principal cello of the Cincinnati Symphony for 20 years before coming here 17 years. So it's kind of been a journey.
But we're here really more to talk about composer Eric Korngold's string sextet. This piece is in 4 movements. The first movement is marked Moderato Allegro, and it opens with basically the second viola.
Right. And there's a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Not even the first viol. It's the second viol it opens with.
exactly. Right. Yeah.
And then violins, cello, and the other viola. It opens quite rhythmically, but then it goes into this beautiful legato melody with a crescendo. The cellos take the melody about 2.5 minutes in for a while, and then it turns a bit somber. And then it brightens up again with an allegro, arco, and pits, and a crescendo. And then it sort of returns to this sort of singing legato with another crescendo. And then it builds quickly with pizzicato and into arco, and then it comes to a gentle end. Just this first movement alone is
Right.
a wonderful work.
Right. It's a big movement, and there's, as I said, the way you're describing it, going through it and talking about the dynamic of a crescendo or a diminuendo, you're also talking about pizzicato and arco, so you're talking texturally about the music as well as what the dynamic of it is like. And that's kind of what contributes to the complexity of the music, is that he's giving you a lot of things to feel in the music. And I think that was very much his own style in the Viennese fashion.
Thank you. The second movement is an adagio, and this opens with arco and pits into a very quiet, again, legato theme with a bit of a crescendo before returning to the quiet. And then there's a second, more powerful crescendo leading to, I think, to the emotional peak of the movement about halfway through, before you have a slow decrescendo into a quiet passage leading to a third and final crescendo, and then a decrescendo to an end. So it's this slow but emotive movement.
Yeah, as we said earlier about just, you know, textural things, where the music moves slower. He has more opportunity for the listener to understand what he's doing harmonically. So I think even though it's somewhat complicated and things might sound a little bit off because it's moving quickly, is the brain and the ear can understand as the music moves slower, and it becomes, in a way, a lush texture because of that, rather than something that collides. The music maybe is moving faster. So I think this slow move, he's like Mahler or Brahms, all these guys, they're like the masters of slow music to me. And it's just in Schoenberg, Verklärte Nacht, you're talking about Viennese school. And when they did the slow thing right, there's nothing more romantic than this writing. And it's so deeply satisfying to play music like that.
And many times they'll take the adagio into sort of painful, perhaps sorrowful, perhaps melancholy direction. But here he does not do that. It's really quite uplifting.
Yeah, it's also, as I said earlier, if you don't have variety in your music, then you're going to be labeled as, oh, here comes the slow movement. It's going to feel like this. Here comes minuet that's going to feel like this, as we know that it's very different in this piece. There's enough variety in it that it takes the listener in and lets you experience a lot of different types of emotions, actually.
I always joke that the reason I like chamber music, perhaps even more than orchestral music, is the fact that I've got a very simple mind. I can't follow 60 people, but I can follow six.
Yeah. Well, the difference is in an orchestra, a lot of times 20 people are doing the same thing. So it's not quite as complicated, maybe, as you think. But I think the beauty in chamber music is the intimacy involved and just the close bond. If it's done well, it should feel like, I would say, especially in a string quartet, which Pacifica guys are great at, it kind of feels like it's one unit that has a variety of sounds and colors and articulations, but it's all within the same mindset and framework that they start as being one and then branch out and do their individual things.
And I like it, this particular movement, because of the fact that you can follow every instrument and just hear the interdigitation of the different players together as you go through the piece.
Right. Yeah, there's homogeneity, a texture when we're collectively playing. There's the individual solos that just kind of pop out here and there. That's what I love about this particular slow movement also, Dave, is that it does have that feeling of something emerging from a cohesive unit that just kind of is like, oh, okay, yeah. Hold it. What instrument is that? It's like sometimes you can't even tell because of the way he writes the voicing, which I find very interesting.
Yeah, you often have to sort of try to figure out just from the timbre of the instrument. And
Right.
that's the one thing great about the string instruments is because they each have their own resonances, they have their own harmonic patterns, so that even if they're playing the same note, you can hear which string instrument it is simply from the timbre of that note.
Right. Oftentimes, that is the case. I would say, on occasion, if you have a viola playing super high and a violin playing maybe middle, they can be fairly closely matched. Even really high on a cello, I think, can sound like a dark violin at times. So there is that mix, but it's nice to have that tessitura from the low C string on the cello to the upper reaches of an E string on the violin, and everything in between.
Well, and as I always talk with my friends who play the cello, the cello can do everything. It can go really low down to almost the bass level, a fifth above the lowest of the bass, and it can play as high, if not higher, than those violins.
Pleasantly, anyway. Yeah, I get comments all the time. People saying, "Oh, you play an instrument?" I say, "Yeah, play the cello." They're like, "Oh, that's our favorite instrument." And then I always wondered why that was the case. And then I read something one time. It said that the cello is the closest in tessitura to the human voice, that the range is so familiar that the highs are not too high, the lows are not necessarily too low, and that it's just a very familiar range to the ear, human ear.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with Global Soul.
There are two U's in WRUU, and one of those U's might be your friend or your next-door neighbor. They might be your coworker or doctor or dentist. They might be your teacher or even your student. Those are the U's you hear on WRUU, your community radio station. WRUU is the unique creation of countless volunteers, whether at the mics or behind the scenes, from right here, your community, all dedicated to crafting new content every day. The other U is you. WRUU couldn't exist without you. You are the musicians and artists we feature on air. You are the innovators and organizers we interview every week. You are the leaders we turn to in times of abundance and need. And we need you. We can't keep going without covering our expenses. So please help by donating whatever you can. Go to WRUU.org today and support your local radio station.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the American Traditions Collection of Concerts, including the Junior American Traditions Competition Finals on Sunday, December 7th at 5:30 p.m. at District Live in the Plant Riverside District, 400 West River Street, Savannah. More information and tickets are available at www.atcsavannah.org. The Spectre Choir presents its fall concert, Phenomenal Women, To Whom Much Is Given, on December 13th at 3 p.m. at Christ Church Episcopal, 28 Bull Street, Savannah. This concert is a tribute to the Savannah women who stood together in the 1950s and 60s to save the city's historic downtown from demolition. This concert reminds us that determined women can change the course of history. More information and tickets can be found at eventbrite.com. Contemporary Classics features weekly conversations with and the music of nationally and internationally known contemporary art music, musicians, and composers. Join me, Dave Lake, your Contemporary Classics host, and these musical guests each week on Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. on WRUU. Welcome back to Evening Eclectic. I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Evening Eclectic, I'm talking with cellist Eric Kim about the new album on which he is performing with a Pacifica quartet entitled The Corn Gold Collection, which was released this past Friday, November 14th, on Sadie Records. The third movement is an intermezzo, marked Moderato con Grazia. And this has a quiet lyrical opening with a slow crescendo, and it has a real dance-like feel. I mean, I think it opens in 6-8, which is sort of like a waltz type feel, but it constantly shifting meter, 6-8, 7-8, 9-8, all the way back. And it's constantly changing back and forth as you go through it. I mean, you guys are pros, but does that constant change of meter cause any issues?
Well, when the meter changes from a traditional meter to, let's say, a non-traditional, which would be a 5-8 or a 7-8, traditional meaning you can divide the beat easily rather than feeling like you have a multimeter going on. There's always a structure still within a 5-8 or a 7-8 or in a 5-16. There's always a grouping of the notes where you know where you are, where you may put emphasis to feel where the main beat is. So yes, it becomes complicated, but once you've spent enough time on it, you understand what the composer is writing, and throwing people for a loop by changing the meter makes it a little uncomfortable. And I think that's part of the process, is that when you change the meter like that, you're introducing a different feel and maybe not being so comfortable with what you're listening to.
Well, and he throws accelerandos and decelerandos in here. So you get this real feeling of rubato in this movement.
Absolutely. And the goal is to make it sound as natural as possible, not to hear that, oh, there's an accelerando, there's a molto ritardando here. It should sound, for lack of a better word, and I'm not a huge fan of it, but it works here, organic, something that's really, truly natural that works.
And it has this sort of light, airy feel. And it said sort of the dance feel, sort of like waltz, but it sort of has this light, airy feel that you sort of feel suspended.
Right. Again, I think it's that variety in which we hear, it's a journey, right, Dave? It takes you from one feeling to another. But I think the point is that you feel that there's not so much diversion from what the original character is that it's a similar journey rather than feeling huge opposites what you're listening to, because then you're taking away from the character of the movement.
Thank you. And then the finale is marked presto. And this, of course, is very fast-paced right out of the gate. I mean, right. we've had relatively relaxed tempos up until this point. Right. And now we're really out of the gate with a very fast. But it's not frantic. It's really more playful. It's really a scherzo.
It is. But I recall with the opening, because he's very clear about the things that he writes, like to say what the initial character should be. With that opening, because it's so fast and furious, you know, the eighth notes, it's like the fastest typewriter you've ever met in your life that had amazing articulation. But I think he also said that it's like it's kind of contradicting directions. It was like it's with fire and humor. So what does that mean? With your, you know, with fire and humor is just like, okay, I guess he means a lot of things by, you know, the articulation. So the yakata, well, it's not that type of articulation where it sounds serious. It's a lighter version of fire, for whatever that means. So I find actually Korngold with his instructions, if you will, that they're very descriptive in a way that helps you find the character in the music.
And as you said, he has a lot of markings in there to sort of give you the sense of what he desires.
Right. Whenever a composer writes like that, Elgar's one, Debussy's like that, hard to leave a note alone. I imagine these people are probably control freaks, is what I'm guessing. If you have to write something over every note, it's like, no, it has to be like this, it has to be like that. Tell something about the composer.
And then there is the slow, extended, I'm going to call it a trio, section with really singing. And this is a chance for the cellos to really sing as we go through this sort of slower section, but the violins then take over. But then there's sort of this slow building tension that leads back to the original tempo at the very end.
Let's be clear. It's the first cello that has the theme, which Brandon Vamos plays beautifully. What I enjoy playing when I play second cello is that I feel like I'm providing a lot of the texture with pizzicati and chords. It really feels like I'm a bass when I'm playing that. I enjoy that a lot. I enjoy playing both first and second cello parts in any chamber music piece, because if you can't embrace what the purpose of playing the cello is, and I mean just that, it's not a violin. Things are not written in the same way for the instruments. It just happened later, as people recognize the cello as a solo instrument, that they started giving them tunes. But really, the reason for the instrument is to really be like a bass. And generally, when you have chamber music that has two cello parts, that lower cello has that opportunity to lay the foundation, whether it be arco or pizzicato. And there's a nice mix of that in this piece for the second cello. But then, as you were saying with the slow, I think it's kind of cliche, but a cello solo is usually kind of the composer's way of taking a slower theme and saying, here's a beautiful voice. I might be a little biased.
As we both know, the cello is really the voice of the strings.
Yeah, I hope you include that, Dave.
Thank you.
So any overall thoughts on this work that we haven't talked about?
We've talked about the complexity of the work. We talked about the textures. We talked about Accelerandi and then, you know, Ritardandi. We haven't talked a lot about how many different transitions there are to different tempi. So there are the slowing downs or the speeding up, but then there is a particular tempo that he wants for a particular character. And I think he does that a lot. And that's what makes playing and learning his pieces difficult, is that you have to get, well, in this case, six people on board that feel the same slowing down, speeding up. That takes time. And it's not the type of thing where if you're playing something more conventional, like Mozart or even Brahms, where people have probably played the pieces before, everyone's played it in a little different way, so people are flexible. Here you're coming to the table where maybe people haven't played the piece before, and you have to come to an agreement of how much time to take somewhere, how much to accelerate. Is that tempo the tempo that we're trying to go to, or is that a subito feeling? There's so many things that you have to actually navigate if it's a new piece, and especially if it's someone like Korngold, where it's very specific, yet you actually need to find that rhythm as a group. I find that the hard part, actually.
I would say there's a difference between four string players playing together and a string quartet, because the string quartet, it just works together. They think together. They emote together. And particularly like the Pacifica that has been together for a long time, you have to add to them to in the sextet.
Yeah, and every sextet's written a little bit differently, too. Some string sextets are written with a string quartet in mind and then adding voices to that. And then other sextets are written as six individual players that add something to the mix. Which one is this one? I would probably say that there is an element of both. You know, the fact that the second viola starts with a solo, well, there's no second viola in a string quartet. So it's kind of interesting how that he chose that. One would think, why wouldn't the first viola start the piece? So that's your first head scratchers. Okay, how come he did that? But I think it's the point is that the guy knew what he was doing, even at an early age. And if you're following your instincts and you're that good, then your voice is bound to be heard. And in this music, I find that it's very refreshing to play. I had mentioned earlier that it's so satisfying to play on so many levels. And I think it's just that sense of achievement when you play Korngold's music. It doesn't leave you like scratching your head, like, why am I doing this? Which I've had many times in my life, but not with the people that you play with, not with the satisfaction to play this music.
And that's the advantage of this album, I think, is that it gives you three distinctly different perspectives of Korngold and his chamber music. The sextet, which we've been talking about tonight, but also the piano quintet and the three string quartets that he has to offer. And so you see this sort of wonderful melange of the work of Eric Korngold.
I'm curious, Dave, what are the opus numbers of the string quartets? I wasn't familiar with that.
First string quartet is written, I think, 5 or 6 years after the sextet.
I see. Okay.
And then the second one was written not too long after that, but the third was written, I think, in the late 30s.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, I will be curious to listen to the recording to hear how different they are. Interesting that his foray into chamber music is to start with a string sextet, then go to a piano quintet. Then I believe the suite was written after that. So I'm not exactly sure how the quartets fit in there, but you would think that someone like Beethoven, who wrote the string trios first, before the string quartets, kind of trying to figure out music minus one at first, and then filling in what that fourth voice looks like. That would be more conventional as far as I would see the approach of, wow, why would a guy just start with a string sextet when he's 19? Maybe he thought that was easier and that the string quartet is held in such high regard that he should have some chops before he did that.
I've heard that quite often, actually, about composers, particularly in, say, the Romantic era, who would write their string quartets very late in their career. Because, again, the string quartet is probably one of the most established chamber ensemble groups. And look at the string quartets. I mean, just look at Beethoven's string quartets
Right.
alone.
Sure.
I mean, how do you beat those late quartets?
I know. Now that I asked that question about sextets before quartets, like Brahms, his Opus 18, Opus 36 are his sextets. Then the quartets are 51, 67, I believe. So, yeah, that's a perfect instance where did the big ensemble first. Yeah, interesting.
That strikes me as a doctoral dissertation.
I bet there's one out there already, to be honest with you.
So tonight on Evening Eclectic, I've been talking with cellist Eric Kim about the new album on which he is performing with the Pacifica Quartet entitled The Korn Gold Collection, which was released this past Friday, November 14th, on Sadie Records. This new 2-CD album includes composer Eric Korngold's 3-string quartets, a string sextet, and a piano quintet. And this album features Eric Kim cello, Orion Weiss piano, and Milena Pajaro van der Staat viola, in addition to the members of the Pacifica Quartet. I want to thank you so very much, Eric Kim, for being on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Dave. It was a nice time speaking with you. Hope to see you in Savannah.
Look you up.